Afternoon.
The purpose of this afternoon's session is basically we're sort of looking at it from a two-pronged attack. It's from the point of view of the risk management for the council's insurance, because our new policy, we are virtually self-insuring. We have a £10,000 excess, so we're looking at trying to minimize those risks. But also, more importantly, we're looking at it from an employee health and safety point of view, because we feel it's just as important to have our employees aware of their own health, safety and well-being and mind the wheel of their car as it is for any other
Can you
health
just put it on
purpose,
there for me?
be
Thanks
it
very much.
violence in the workplace or AIDS awareness or any of those kind of health and safety issues. It's a very, very informal session. We'll welcome any comments that you have, and he will also impart as much of his knowledge as he can in the 2 hours to you. So please listen and enjoy. And I shall even join in on this one. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that introduction, Catherine. About the umpteenth time. As you say, now you're going to have a listen to what it's all about. So hopefully, she keeps saying it's terribly interesting. I hope she doesn't deny that at the end of the 2 hours. Good afternoon. What I'd like to start off with is to emphasize why you're here, and the fact that I'm not going to patronize you as a driver. You're all competent, sensible drivers, I'm sure. And no doubt that you feel quite happy with the manner in which you perform your functions on the road. But what I'd like you to do is to go with me during the next couple of hours, have an open mind, and if I say something which is in any way provocative, question me if you want to, because that's what we're here for, to communicate. Anything you want to argue with and discuss, please do. Not just the content of the 2 hours, but anything else which you feel is pertinent to you as a group or indeed you as an individual. If you want an answer, please ask. Well, I shall be able to give it to you. If I don't know the answer, I'll find out in the interim period and let you know at the end of the session. But hopefully I shall know the answer. The main constituents of the afternoon revolve around the awareness of you on the road and what you individually can do about other road users. How do you individually view other road users? Who? Yes, Lindsay? Idiots?
Yeah,
Great,
always treat
yes.
them as if they'll always do the unpredictable.
In fact, some of them are screaming idiots, aren't they? You know, they're not just basic idiots, but they really do something which can be quite fraught. And there's no doubt every one of you have been in a situation created by another road user. Not, of course, created by any one of you. No? Or shall we say that maybe is said with a bit of a tongue in cheek? Do you think that you can be sort of put behind the eight ball? You know, you might be a little bit blameworthy in some instances. Yes? Yeah, I think that's true, isn't it? And I think what we've got to think about is what our general attitude is to ourselves and to our other road users that are around us. How do you therefore generate the knowledge before you start getting the attitude? Because the attitude always comes in when you start getting more experienced, don't you? I mean, you don't really have an attitude problem when you first start to drive, do you? Other than apprehension and fear. But generally, you start getting the attitude problem when you think, oh, I don't need all this old rubbish the instructor taught me, do I? Because I'm now a competent driver because I've passed my test, haven't we? Or do we? When did you last look at a book about driving? Come on, come on. When did you last look at a book about driving? Anybody read one recently?
Only on
France. When did you last look at the highway code?
5 years ago.
You only passed your test 5 years ago, 10 years ago. Now, driving is probably the most dangerous thing you do, unless you bungee jump or abseil or do other daft, well, maybe not daft things, the people who do them, but certainly they're potentially dangerous. But if you do those sort of things, somebody teaches you, and if you're a golfer, you might go to the professional and say, oh, I'm hooking, you know, can you show me how I can't do this? Or if you're a bridge player, you might go and ask advice or read books. But what do you do about your driving? Not a lot. When did you last read the Highway Code? A long time ago. Do you remember that one? Do you? You do? 6p that cost. That's a long time ago that one came out. That one? 75p, 50p, 60p. And last but not least, that one. Have you seen that one? No, says so. Good God, you should have a look at it.
Pretty ancient.
No.
Thank you.
99p. It's going up a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bit tight. So it's just out, this one. Well, it came out the end of last year, December, January time. And it's good 99p's worth. Now, as I say to every one of you on these courses, do, when you go through W.H. Smith, pick one up and have a look at it. Now, you won't be able to read it whilst you're in there and save 99p. But it's not really too much to ask, is it, to sport out a quid, eh? You need to put the penny in the poor box at the same time. But it's really a good quid's worth of knowledge. And I don't think you really know it, do you? Do you? Pardon?
Yeah,
oh, right then, right. A volunteer's better than any in the press man, isn't it?
What?
I tell you what we're going to do then. Only a bit of fun, this, really. It's not a... It can be a serious exercise, but it's not meant to put you under any pressure. But I'm going to give you a little piece of paper. On the piece of paper, it's got 10 questions. And all I want you to do is ring the answers. Like a Ballard test, where you just put the little ring around the A, B, or C, or D. And then at the end of it, we'll talk it through. Now, it's not really for my information. It doesn't really worry me whether you know it or not. I'd be very impressed if one of you gets 100%. But I want you to realise whether you know it or not. So when you go out that door, you'll have a little bit more knowledge than when you came in that door. And it's not only revolving around this, of course, it's about the other things that we're going to stimulate your interest with as we go through the afternoon. So would you all volunteer to have a go at that with me then? And all I want you to do is just ring the answers. It only takes about 5 minutes. We'll quickly go through those. Again, it'll take another 5 minutes or so. And I'll be surprised if you don't find it quite interesting. Okay. Have you all got a pen? Cool.
He told you to bring a pen, John.
I'll find you one.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, do that. Okay, about 5 minutes then. Okay, well, I think we're all more or less there by now. What I'll ask Sophie to do, if she's still going on with this, you're a little bit late, just put a couple of plugs in your ears while I give the answer out, because you've got a very honest face.
Thank you.
So you just carry on with it. So the main idea is that when we get the answers to these, you know, regardless of what you're actually telling me, you know whether you've got them right or not. You can mark your own papers, so you can cheat if you like, it won't make any difference. You'll notice that they're geared to certain things on the question paper. The constituents, really, of what we're going to talk about this afternoon, which revolve mainly around thinking about things that you're doing, i.e. good observation and concentration, those two going hand in hand. Always organising yourself in relation to a good separation distance, so you can equate what safety means to you. Time equals safety. You can think about a disciplined approach to problems, whatever it is, whether it's a roundabout or however you name a particular hazard. In other words, a good mirror signal manoeuvre routine, however you apply it, but in a particular order, which gives you a discipline so that you're keeping yourselves out of the problems that other people may give you, if you allow them to. So that's how this is geared. So having said that, if you'd like to get ready, I'll give you the answer to all the questions. And if you ringed it, just tick the answer as appropriate. Hopefully they're the same as the ring. If not, tick the other one. Question one is A. Question two is D. Question three is A. Four, C. Five, B. Question six. A should be lane markings and divisions, that's the white. B for green, exit, entry, slip roads. Red, C for the hard shoulder. And D, the amber, central reserve. Number seven. You should have ringed the following. A, B, and D. I'll repeat that one. Ring the following. A, B, and D. Question 8, D. Question 9, A. In question 10, you should have the word preventable and words to the effect should not have been in that position and not have assumed that the other driver was going to do what he eventually did do, words to that effect. Lindsay got it right, obviously. Great guffaws at the back there. Right, are there any points then that you want to raise on that? Or do you want to sit there and ruminate a bit while you have a look, see what you've got? Are there any queries on any of the particular questions? Any you find ambiguous or doubtful? How about...
The roundabout question is very interesting.
Yes.
A lot of people don't seem to know the rules at roundabouts, and
you're right,
you
they
cannot
don't.
Assume anything at a roundabout, and you have to be so careful now. And you're getting the larger roundabouts and more lanes, and I don't think a lot of people actually know the rules when they get into a roundabout.
No. Let's go through them then, shall we? Yeah, let's just run through what we feel are appropriate. Quite right, people don't know, and if they do know, they don't care, some of them. They think it's old hat to give signals because they know what they're doing. Why should they bother about what other people want to do? And they get through as quickly as possible, they don't need signals anyway. Because people are not really going to benefit if they're going so quick. The main thing you've got to think about with roundabouts is that where does it all start? Does it start on the roundabout? Or does it start on the approach side of the roundabout? Where can you gain the information on the approach side if you can't see the roundabout? Road markings and the ADS sign. How often do people, though, glean that information? Do they take it in? Do they inwardly digest it? Do they observe and concentrate? If the roundabout suggests that the road you're on is a fairly wide road and the road you're exiting on is a fairly narrow road, it will normally indicate you're going from probably a dual carriageway, which you know you're on if you're already on it, but the road you're entering might not be. So therefore your position And remember that the cardinal thing with all driving is think correct position, think correct speed, think correct gear. Position, speed, gear. So all the time you're thinking that. So the first thing you're always going to think about is position. So as you come up to a roundabout, you're thinking of the exit or exits. It might be straightforward like that one. It might be an awkward one. Some of them have got arms going off all over the place. So if it's a strange area to you, it's up to you to organise yourself. Don't try and do it at too fast a speed. Give yourself time. Because if you don't give yourself time, nobody else will. If you go rushing in and you're in a 30 and you're doing 45, they'll all rush in with you. And you pass the sign, you're into the roundabout, and you're not quite sure what you do, so what do? Take a chance, or you keep going round until you find the right exit that you want. And it's not so daft as it seems, you know. If you get into a roundabout and you make a mistake, what's the best thing to do? Take a late manoeuvre and dive in, or go round and have another look at it. Go round, have another look at it. Don't ever be frightened to do that. Never make a rash move in conflicting traffic situations, because you find yourself, they might gesticulate at you, they might blow their horn at you, they might say some very rude words that you've never heard before, or you could have an accident or an incident. So always give yourself time. So as you come up on the approach side, think position. Now, if we're going to exit on that side, where's the best position that you would normally be in? Position 1 or position 2? Anybody? Who said 1? Okay, so you're going to follow through in position 1, and if the situation allows it, and there's not much traffic on the roundabout, and you can see that the exit side is the same width as the entry side, is there anything wrong in following around in that position? If you've got an exit like that, as opposed to following around like that. Is there anything wrong in that? The preferable position, I've got to say, is the position 2, unless the circumstances allow you to be in position 1. Say, for example, you come up and you might see that there is a parked vehicle there. There might be a lot of traffic sort of nosing out there, or there might be a congestion there for some reason. If you think the position there is better, well, of course you can take that position. The highway code suggests you take the easiest and safest route through the roundabout. But what you've got to be very careful about is that if you go into a roundabout in that position and you get somebody in that position who is also going the same way and there's a pinch point there, that's the danger. Who has right of way at that point? Who has right of way on a roundabout? So, you see, we've got here a divergence of opinion immediately, haven't we? Now imagine then that we're all going round a roundabout. Are we all of the same opinion? We're not, are we? So therefore, if there's any element of doubt, keep yourself into position 2. There are circumstances where you would adopt position 1. If it's safe to go through in that position and you can see that the exit side is clear, okay, there's nothing wrong with that. But the query that's put down on that little paper there suggested that there was a problem. And a person who was coming in with you followed right the way around. And you often see them do that, don't you? Yeah, sure. You often see them do that. So be aware of the possibility of anybody cutting across the lane that you're already in. And the only way of making sure they don't, unless it's completely clear, is to be in a safe, positive lane on your way through the roundabout. You might get, I'll be with you in a sec, you might get other roundabouts where they've got satellite roundabouts. And those, they're even more critical. They work very, very well, as long as you take your time and you're always in the right position and anticipate who's going to come through. Yes?
Yeah, I was under the impression that position 2 is always for taking the first turning off the...
No. No, it is for that. Yes, you're right. I mean, you would obviously be in that position if you're going to turn left. But if you're going to go down there, by all means. But it's safer if you're car number 2 behind car number 1 in position 2, and he's signalling left. well, all right, he's going to turn left, just pause, let him clear, and then follow the way through. So you've got to have a little bit of patience in relation to what other road users may do. He may even change his mind, mightn't he? They often do, don't they? They're signalling, oh, I don't want to go that way, I want the next one. So if you're manoeuvring around him and he suddenly changes his mind, we're compounding what he is actually doing by assuming that he's going to do the right thing. So if you work on the presumption then that position is the preferable one, bearing in mind that you know what you're doing, but you don't know what other people are doing. Any other points on that?
Can you talk about indicators on roundabouts? Because that frustrates me when I'm waiting to go onto a roundabout. I don't know where the other... I can't really read where the other car is.
No, because very, very often people... they may not be sure themselves, might they? So you can't read into their minds. They might be total strangers and they're thinking, well, oh, there's one on again. They've probably not read the sign, or they might not give an indicator at all. So don't ever take anything for granted. Even when we're talking about the person who has right of way on a roundabout. Now, who normally has right of way on a roundabout? So you immediately all say the person on the right. We're all quite comfortable with that. Have you ever gone onto a roundabout, being the person on the right, and somebody's come out straight in front of you? Yes? So it doesn't always work, does it? So we know, but does everybody else know? You're on a motorway. You're on the main part of the carriageway. And coming in on the left, there is this traffic coming down a slip road to join you. Who has right of way? People on the motorway. Now we feel that that's correct. Have you ever been on the motorway when somebody has pushed their way in front of you and caused you inconvenience, made you brake? Sure you have. We all have, haven't we? So you cannot take it for granted. You can work on a presumption, a preponderance of probabilities or whatever, but I mean what you cannot do is take it that is absolutely fact that that is going to happen. So always work out in your mind that nobody has right of way in those circumstances. If you keep that in your mind, you won't get yourself drawn in on the false premise that you must be okay. Very often you will be, but you don't always judge purely on that. You look at the vehicle, you look at the driver, you look at the attitude of the vehicle, what's its speed, what's its position. That is, if you're concentrating and observing, which is one of the cardinal things I've already mentioned. Oh, right.
Okay,
thank you very much indeed. So we've got to the situation then where we are making sure that nobody is going to put us in a position whereby they can cause us problems. And if you work on that presumption, and I'm not suggesting you creep around frightened of your own shadow, going at a slow speed. This is working with deliberation and making sure you move through the situation competently, but don't take anything for granted. Now, any other points on the paper?
Just still on the question of roundabouts. Beck's question with mini roundabouts, you know, these dots in the middle of the junction.
Yes.
And you see people frequently charging across the middle or even to the right-hand side of them because they don't believe that they have to go be observed and gone round them or whatever. They're there for a purpose, and their size is there for a purpose in terms of the constrictions of the other road sizing or whatever, and obviously huge vehicles that just can't possibly manoeuvre without going over. I mean, one assumes that's why the highway authority put them there at that size. What's the actual legal position about incursion onto that centre spot?
Well, you normally find, Ian, that those roundabouts are put at points where there's a known problem in relation to access from minor roads onto major roads, and it's a cheap and easy way for local authorities to segregate traffic. And also, of course, you can't always put in a big roundabout because there might be buildings there might be services there that they can't remove, etc. So it's a temporary measure in many ways. They work quite effectively, but like everything else, they only work with the cooperation of the motoring public. So always treat those in exactly the same way as you would a normal roundabout, so that you're coming up and always assuming people should give way, etc., in the manner in which they should, unless the roundabout directs otherwise. And should you go round them in such a way that is making it more difficult for you and more difficult for other people? The answer is no. As you say, in large vehicles, they can't possibly go around them. I do a lot of large goods vehicle training, and if you get with a very large vehicle, 38 tons, you cannot, even with an Arctic, which has got a very good dog leg to get around, you cannot do it. And therefore, you've got to take the shortest route across. And these are just little blips in the road, you know. I'm not talking about those which are built round. But they are built in such a way that they should cater for the largest vehicle that is likely to use that road. So use the normal rules on the approach side for those, i.e. roundabout rules. But going back onto the signals again, on roundabouts like that, don't give unnecessary signals. The point, which I don't think I quite adequately covered, Alan mentioned it, as you know, in relation to where you give a signal. The new highway code makes a slight variation in relation to where you should give the signal when you're exiting on the roundabout. A lot of people are quite clear when they know they're going to turn left like that. A lot of people aren't so clear when they're going straight ahead. They very often will signal right and signal left, and they're not going to do that at all. They're going straight ahead. So don't give a signal at all. You're just going straight through. If you give a signal left, people think you're going there. If you give a signal right, think you're going there. But when you're going to that exit there, if you get to that position you haven't given a signal, that's the point, just after the junction, there, at the point of the junction, to give a left-hand indicator signal, mainly for people waiting there. This is the point you meant, Alan, wasn't it? You're waiting and you're thinking, and this is particularly the case with a large goods vehicle, you'd be sitting there waiting to go, and there's a lovely gap, and you think, can I? And yes, no, I can't, because he's given a signal too late, and by the time you start to move, there's another vehicle coming around the corner. And of course, that's what encourages some of the chaps in the large goods vehicles to use their weight to push their way through. A little bit intimidating, isn't it? But you can understand, it's not excusable really, but you can understand their impatience when people consistently don't tell them what they're going to do. So indicate at that point that you're going to exit there. If you're going all the way around, indicate right. The only time you're going to indicate right is that position there when you're going there. Be careful about those sort of junctions. They're not all straightforward. So if you're going to turn left, don't give a signal there. You're going to turn left in there. You must reserve that signal until you get to that point there. Don't give too many signals on the small roundabout. If you give too many, by the time you go click, click, you know, they say, what was that? It's too late. They don't know what you intend to do, what you've actually done. You must give other drivers and riders time to absorb the information that you're giving them. Your signal is the only voice you've got, apart from the horn, is the only voice you've got of telling them what you intend to do. So you must give people time. And if they can't absorb the information, what's the point of giving the signal in the first place? Now, we'll talk a bit more about signals, because presently we're going to have a look at a little bit of video which is showing commentary. Now, I don't know whether you've ever done commentary driving or heard commentary driving, have you? And the idea is to highlight the things that you feel are pertinent to you and what you're going to do about them. But we'll be coming on to that in about 5 minutes. Now, any other points about any of the other questions?
Stan, if I just turn around the other way, what you were talking about then. You said about the driver giving the left-hand indication as he's about to leave the roundabout. If you're in the situation where you're waiting to come onto the roundabout, you see somebody has indicated left, you assume they're going to turn off, so you pull onto the roundabout, and they're not. Who's in the wrong?
You both are. Yeah. When you see that, remember I said don't assume anything. You've been sitting in the side road waiting to come out. And you see a vehicle coming along, and it's got its left-hand indicator on, and you think, oh, lovely, I've been waiting here for ages. It's probably only a matter of seconds, but it seems a long time. You start to move, and he gives you a horn warning, swerves around, and carries on up the road. Who's in the wrong? You both are. He for indicating he's going to turn left when he's not. You for assuming he's going to turn left when he isn't. So you cannot assume anything. You've got to make sure, absolutely certain, that that vehicle is going to turn. Wait till you see him start to slow down. See the posture of the vehicle, of the man inside the vehicle. Have a look in the vehicle. Don't just look at the vehicle. Look at the things attendant to the vehicle, the wheels. How he's got his hands on the wheel. If you're coming along and you see a stationary vehicle, what's the driver doing? Is he looking over his or her shoulder? Are they fiddling down? Do they like to open the door? There are so many little bits and pieces that you can accommodate in your own mind if you want to. You can all do it. We know you can. You can all concentrate. Can you concentrate 100% all the time? Anybody here think they can? I'd like to come and shake your hand if you, because there ain't no such animal. You cannot do it. What you've got to do is reserve your concentration for those particular times when it's a particular need. The other times that your concentration will drop a little bit. So you've got to learn how to cultivate your ability to summon up the levels that you need when they're particularly needful. Anything else on roundabouts? Because we spent an awful lot of time on it. I don't mind, because if you've got the questions, we'll certainly spend the time. Good. Any other points that you want to raise on any of the others then? Well, you see, it says a 40-mile-an-hour limit, Alan. So if it's 30, it doesn't appertain. But if it does, if you're out on near a road junction, even in 30, but are they enforced now? They're not, are they? So therefore, people like yourselves are understandably quite surprised. They, oh, I didn't realise that. I mean, if you'd have been reported last week for it, you would think, yeah, I'm damn sure that's right. Yeah.
What is the distance away from the corner? I mean, is there a stipulated distance?
Yes, there is. Yes.
What is that?
10 meters.
Because I frequently come across a taxi proprietor who insists on parking his car less than that distance all the night, and you can't get into the law. You can very
difficult. Well, yes, it is an offence. But the thing is this: the police will only apply their resources to a matter which they feel is appropriate to the need of that particular problem, and the need of this particular problem is. Unless there's an area whereby there is an accident risk, they won't bother with it. They can't deal with everything, can they? So therefore, you've got to be aware of these things and consider the safety implications, as we all do.
We've actually got a situation outside where I'm here, where the 30-mile-an-hour speed limit is, finishes just in front of some of the houses, because we've got no access to the gardens, so we just park on the road. So we're parking illegally, but the police actually... of all that they've said, they will turn a blind eye to it, is providing that we all do it sensibly with that and face like in the line of the traffic.
Yes, yes.
And in fact, it's less of a hazard at night than isn't it?
Yeah, probably is. So it's a question of using your common sense. And you look at the needs of a particular area and apply the rule of thumb to a certain extent. I mentioned in the earlier session today about a situation that appertained when I was in the police at Maidstone. And the majority of people who do this sort of work are ex-police officers, and that's why, you know, we have the training and we can recall instances of bad driving. That's why we're quite vehement in our pursuit of safety procedures, because you see the results, unfortunately, of the people who don't follow them. But one of the problems in the Maidstone area was parking on the footpath. Now, you might think to yourself, well, that's not a big problem, but this particular road was an A road, and it was round a very sharp bend up a gradient, and in a 30 limit, people used to consistently park because they hadn't got garages. But round the corner, there are side roads, but they would insist on parking on the footpath. And so I said to my blokes on several occasions, they used to think I was a proper pain in the derriere, I expect, go up, sort them out, don't necessarily report them, advise them if necessary, if they consistently do it, you'll have to use a fixed penalty ticket. It wasn't so much the fact that of parking on the footpath, it was the consequences of parking on the footpath, i.e. you get a blind person come along, you get a woman with a pram. As a fast road, what have they got to do? Knock the bloke up and say, can you come and move your car? Out in the road, round the road, one-way street, and they come littering round there, much faster than 30. Sorry? Sorry? Yes, that's right. You know it, do you? I know. Well, funnily enough, I went down there last week, and I must admit, I came around the corner, and there's one particular vehicle still does it, and it's a Capri. And it's always parked on the footpath. And there's a traffic warden standing there doing a traffic, doing a fixed penalty ticket. And I must admit, I sort of applauded him, not literally. I thought, thank goodness for that. Now, that vehicle's not there anymore. But for weeks, you know, it was parked there all day and very often at night time. Now he appears to have got the message. I don't want to see people nicked, but that was a danger. And, you know, that's sort of a difference to yours, where they perceive the problem or they don't. Sorry.
Can I just ask what, this restriction, is it for 40 mile an hour and above, or is it just in 40 mile an hour?
No, and above. Yeah, yeah. Any other points? Quite happy about the 2-second rule, then. We're going to deal with that a little bit more in a minute. No queries on that? Lane markings and divisions. I saw a few sort of puzzled looks when we went on to the red and amber. You probably got some of the others, but it's the red and amber that causes the problem, isn't it? You think, is the red on the right, or is it on the left? Now, you might think to yourself, well, what the devil difference does it make, whether we know whether it's red or amber? Do you think it makes a difference? What do you reckon, Lindsay?
Probably subconsciously, it's one of those things that you always take for granted till it's probably been taken away from you.
Right.
If they were all the same colour, you'd think, but because you've become so used to seeing the green and the ambers and the red,
so when could it be particularly used to, do you think? In any adverse weather conditions, particularly fog, where you're travelling along and you suddenly see a red stud on your right-hand side, where would you be? Hard shoulder. Yes. Somebody said this morning on the wrong side of the carriageway, which you probably would be, but you don't suddenly turn around and go the other way, do you? But fog can come down very quickly. You know, you're in a position where everything's honky-dory and all of a sudden you're in a bank of fog. And you do very quickly lose track of where you are. So it can be very, very useful there. So a little knowledge can help you. This question of lawfully cross or straddle double solid lines. To pass a pedal cyclist. Now, how many of you here have been in situations where you've been behind a pedal cyclist and you've been tempted, I'm not saying you've done it, but you've been tempted to go past? Yes? Yeah, cool. I know. You all put your hand. The thing is, you should never be tempted to do it. It might enter your head, oh, Lord, I'm not going to sit behind this chap for ages. You can overtake on a double white line. What it says is you must not cross or straddle the line. So if you can overtake with safety, there's no real problem, is there? But can you overtake with safety? Because when they place these, they're always in the zone of danger, double white lines. They're very rigorously enforced. Anybody here in the technical services department, they would confirm that. But the main thing you've got to think about is if you start to overtake and the cyclist who may be wearing his stereophonic Walkman, Beethoven's Fifth or some headbanging music going on, is he aware of you around? Probably not. He might come round a drain hole cover just as you're about to pass him. You either stamp Lucas up his right buttock, or you go over the double white lines, or you brake and somebody behind might be too close behind you. So you can't really take for granted, can you, that he may or may not do anything. How about the milk float? The old milkman going down the road reading the paper, isn't he? About 5 miles an hour. And what have you got to do in a double white line system? Got to follow him, haven't you? If it's a hatching, it's a little different, isn't it? That, which is, you know, just an indication. It's not bounded by a solid line, but it's just a normal hatching. It's like a double white line with broken lines on your side. You can overtake if it's safe to do so, and you can regain your near side without danger or inconvenience to other vehicles coming the other way. But as far as the solid line is concerned, don't do it, because it immediately, if you do transgress, it'll mean penalty points if you're seen doing it, regardless of the consequences of it. Straight away, it's an endorsable moving traffic offence. Any other things then on that before we move on to pastures new? All quite happy? Okay. If you'd like to just pass those along to the end of the line, then we'll collect them all up. Now you recall I said that we will try and isolate throughout the afternoon those things which are going to be useful to you. Let's talk then about this question of observation and concentration. We're going to have a little look at the video in a minute, but before we do that, I'd like to draw your attention to a situation. This is a real one, which was an accident that took place, and I'd like you to give me your opinions as to whether it was preventable and whether it was blameworthy. And if it is blameworthy, who is to blame? So I'll give you the scenario. Well, I've left that on because I can't guarantee I'm going to get me channel zero.
Can we
but
turn it a bit, Pat? The sign. Do you want me to push it around?
Is it really disturbing you?
It is. I'll just sit in a different place.
No, that's all right.
Thank you. That's great.
Sorry about that. Even though she was late. Right, here's the scenario then. So, 30 mile an hour road and busy day. And quarter to nine in the morning, all the commuters are running around half asleep, wish they got up a bit early, but they didn't. Here we have a chap who wants to buy a paper. Here is a paper shop. He comes along, oh, paper shop, opens his door to get out his paper, get out to get the paper. Little boy on a bike comes along, knocks him off. Didn't see the lad, should have done because he'd just overtaken him. But he was selfish, all he was concerned with was going and getting his paper. The little boy is about 8, he falls on the ground, he's not really hurt, his legs are tangled up in his bike and he's trying to get up. Now, vehicle number 1 and vehicle number 2 is following him, and vehicle number 3 is following him. Now you can see that they're fairly close together, aren't they? But in between vehicle 2 and vehicle 1, there's a reasonable distance, and the distance is in fact 75 feet. So what's the overall stopping distance of 30 miles an hour? 75 feet. So he should be able to stop, this chap. And he does. And he stops just there, no problems. Number 3, he's not very far behind the other chap. Same distance when it all happens. Any problem as far as he's concerned? Right, so where does he first see the problem? That's it, when he's done his braking. Now the braking, bearing in mind, it takes you half a second to react anyway, but his actual thinking distance is about 30 feet. And the 45 feet is needed for his braking distance, given the overall of 75. So when he sees that,